days of wine and roses. Laugh and run away.
Hello. This is Joanne Salisbury Troxell welcoming you to the Poet's Corner, a KGVM community radio production. The poet I'd like to discuss today is Stanley Kunitz, an old favorite of mine that I hope may become a favorite of yours. I will be selecting poems from only two of Kunitz's many publications. One, Passing Through, the later poems, new and selected. This charming book is a National Book Award winner. The other book, The Wild Braid, is my very favorite book to give to gardeners. It's a small, hearty book about the life and poetry of Kunitz as he approaches 100 years old, still writing, still gardening. It's also a tender picture book of an old man still tending his garden, still telling about his life in words, the many ways of words. Many years ago, before the internet, when one had to find all information in the card catalog, one of the chief reference books on the shelf was Stanley Kunitz's 20th Century Authors. With the advent of the internet and incredible databases at our disposal, one can find anything you want quickly. The Kunitz 20th Century Authors has been outmatched, but the information about this wonderful intellectual, poet, gardener, spirited man, poet laureate, comes up with due speed as I type in his name. I give credit as well as thanks for the internet. I'd like to start by paraphrasing Kunitz about his perspective on poetry in our country. We are not, he says, a poetry-loving country. We have no great poets to guide us in a common humanity and consciousness of language and history, no voice to bind generations together in a common aspiration as do other countries with their Shakespeare, Homer, Pushkin, or Dante. Our great myth has to do with politics. Anyone can become president and power. In a direct quote from Kunitz relevant to this, he says, Walt Whitman perceived that need and gave us his mighty book, but it came late in the day when the seeds of progress, empire, and materialism had already taken root, not to be overrun by his leaves of grass. However, despite his understanding of our national purpose historically, Kunitz also always affirms poetry, what I like to call the soul rising. There are, he says, more poets in this country than anywhere else. They continue, he asserts, to flourish out of the mainstream. So to all you poets out there and poetry lovers, remember how essential you are. Stanley Kunitz was born July 29, 1905, in Worcester, Massachusetts. He died at the age of 101 years on May 14, 2006. It was a long, fruitful, rich life. He was the youngest of three children, having two older sisters, Sophia and Sarah. His parents, Helen and Solomon Kunitz, were both of Russian, Jewish, Lithuanian descent. His father had a business as a dressmaker. Having money problems, he filed bankruptcy and went to Elm Park in Worcester and drank carbolic acid, a slow and painful way to commit suicide, just 6 weeks before Kunas was born. His mother, in whatever anguish or anger, removed all traces of Kunas' father from their life. This absence of a father, the knowledge of how he died, would affect Kunas all of his life, as if his father's death made him even more real than when he was present. Here is a poem Kunas wrote many years after the fact of his father's death, when he was 64, titled Portrait. You get a sense of profound loss of his father, his mother, and Kunas remembering and writing about it when he is, 64. The Portrait. My mother never forgave my father for killing himself, especially at such an awkward time and in a public park, that spring when I was waiting to be born. She locked his name in her deepest cabinet and would not let him out, though I could hear him thumping. When I came down from the attic with the pastel portrait in my hand of a long-lipped stranger with a brave mustache and deep brown level eyes, she ripped it into shreds without a single word and slapped me hard. In my 64th year, I can feel my cheek still burning. Here is a poem he wrote that also comes from an experience from his youth. This poem was published in the New Yorker when Kunas was about 75. It is titled Halley's Comet. Miss Murphy in first grade wrote his name in chalk across the board and told it was roaring down the storm tracks of the Milky Way at frightful speed, and if it wandered off its course and smashed into the earth, there'd be no school tomorrow. A red-bearded preacher from the hills with a wild look in his eyes stood in the public square at the playground's edge proclaiming he was sent by God to save every one of us, even the little children. Repent, ye sinners, he shouted, waving his hand-lettered sign. At supper, I felt sad to think that it was probably the last meal I'd share with my mother and my sisters, but I felt excited too and scarcely touched my plate. So Mother scolded me and sent me early to my room. The whole family's asleep except for me. They never heard me steal into the stairwell hall and climb the ladder to the fresh night air. Look for me, Father, on the roof of the red brick building at the foot of Green Street. That's where we live now, you know, on the top floor. I'm the boy in the white flannel gown, sprawled on this coarse gravel bed, searching the starry sky, waiting for the world to end. It's a wonderful memory. The father, look for me here, might be in reference to his idea of his own father, the loss mythologized into possibility. As you can see, it is alive with images, the comet, the preacher, the end of the world, and we can be in this young boy's journey and the hope that his father will come for him. When I think of Kunas, I am amazed at the many remarkable things that he accomplished in his life. He left home when he was 15 and got a job as a cub reporter for the Worcester Telegram. From there, his world spiraled into writing and an intellectual and literary life. He graduated magna cum laude from Harvard with a degree in English and a master's degree from Harvard the following year. He wanted to go and study for a PhD, but was advised by the university hierarchy not to, because, quote, Anglo-Saxon students would not like to be taught by a Jew. You can imagine how much this hurt this sensitive, intelligent man at this injustice coming from academia, especially Harvard, where he had excelled. He joined the armed services in World War II as a conscientious objector, and after the war, he taught at various colleges, including Bennington, the New School, Brandeis, Columbia, to name a few, and he also had visiting appointments at Yale, Rutgers, Princeton, and Vassar. He taught for a total of 35 years. But it was his poetry that established him as a profound, inspirational writer. His vulnerability, his move towards intimacy with his readers, what he would call soul, illuminated his poems. This one for his sisters, Sophia and Sarah, is tender and understanding of their sorrows as women. My sisters, who whispered souls have shapes? So has the wind, I say. But I don't know. I only feel things blow. I had two sisters once with long black hair who walked apart from me and wrote the history of tears. Their stories faded with their names, but the candlelight they carried, like dancers in a dream, still flickers on their gowns as they bend over me to comfort my night fears. Ah, let nothing grieve you, Sarah and Sophia. Shush, shush, my dears, now and forever. Another poem, titled Route 6, is about married life, the angers and the healing, people living together, loving as they do, that have lapses, and returning to the country, taking care of the garden, reminds us of the endless cycles of life and death and sorrow and joys. Route 6. The city squats on my back. I am heart sore, stiff-necked, exasperated. That's why I slammed the door. That's why I tell you now, in every house of marriage, there's room for an interpreter. Let's jump into the car, honey, and head straight for the Cape, where the cock on a horse top crows that the weather's fair, and my garden waits for me to coax it into bloom. As for these passions left that flare past understanding, like bundles of dead letters out of our previous lives and amazes with their fevers, we can stow them in the rear along with ziggurats of luggage. And Celia, our transcendental cat, past mistress of all languages, including Hottentot and silence. We'll drive nonstop till dawn, and if I grow sleepy at the wheel, you'll keep me awake by singing in your bravura Chicago style, Ruth Etting's smoky song, Love Me or Leave Me, belting out the choices. Light glazes the eastern sky over Buzzard's Bay. Celia gyrates upward like a performing seal, her glistening nostrils a quiver to sniff the brine-spiked air. The last stretch towards home. 20 summers roll by. The garden and the promise it brings, the smell of earth. This, for Kunis, was the cycles of life, the way we are living and dying side by side. And his dialogue with this. Here's another poem, The Quarrel, where he opens his inner world to us, his reader. Talks about everything we do is our character. The Quarrel. The word I spoke in anger weighs less than a parsley seed, but a road runs through it that leads to my grave, that bought and paid for lot on a salt-sprayed hill in Truro, where the scrub pines overlook the bay. Halfway I'm dead enough, strayed from my own nature and my fierce hold on life. If I could cry, I'd cry, but I'm too old to be anybody's child, Liebchen. With whom should I quarrel, except in the hiss of love, that harsh, irregular flame? I love that poem. I love the honesty of it. And here's another called The Unquiet Ones, the phantoms of his uneasy parents returning to him as an insightful poem. In life, as in death, they were separate and distinct. Years ago, I lost both my parents' addresses. Father and mother lie in their neglected cribs, obscure as mold, unvisited. I do not need to summon them. When I put out the light, I hear them stir, dissatisfied in their separate places, in death as in life, remote from each other, having no conversation except in the common ground of their son's mind. They slip through narrow crevices and, suddenly blown tall, glide into my cave of phantoms, unwelcome guests, but not unloved, dark emissaries of the two-faced God. Stanley Kunis was the New York State Poet Laureate from 1987 to 1989. He was the 10th Poet Laureate of the United States in 2000, when he was 95 years old. He continued to write and publish until 2005, until he was 100 years old. For most of his life, Kunis divided his time between New York City and Provincetown, Massachusetts. He was also an exceptional horticulturist, and his terrace garden in Provincetown was a marvel of a poetic, astonishing beauty. His connection with the world, with poetry, all came from the same root of awareness. In this poem, The Snakes of September, he talks about the wild braid of connection. The Snakes of September. All summer I heard them rustling in the shrubbery, outracing me from tier to tier in my garden, a whisper among the viburnums, a signal flashed from the hedge garrow, a shadow pulsing in the barberry thicket. Now that the nights are chill and the annuals spent, I should have thought them gone in a torpor of bloods slipped to the nether world before the sickle frost. Not so. In the deceptive balm of noon, as if defiant of the curse that spoiled another garden, these two appear on show through a narrow slit in the dense green brocade of a North Country spruce, dangling head down, entwined in a brazen love knot. I put out my hand and stroke the fine, dry grit of their skins. After all, we are partners in this land, co-signers of a covenant. At my touch, the wild braid of creation trembles. So beautiful, the wild braid of connection, linking us all to creation. So much of Stanley Kunitz's power is in his compassion, his vulnerability, and his courage to write about it and let us know that whatever our losses, our failures, we are never alone. We are of the common human that has moments of brightness and hope laced with sadness and despair. His major concern, he said toward the end, was about what is happening to the quality of American life and spirit and the nation's destiny. This last poem, titled Touch Me, embraces his knowledge of aging, the inevitable living and dying at the same time, and how this dialogue with himself is the voice in so many of his poems, his soul searching. Touch me. Summer is late, my heart. Words plucked out of the air some 40 years ago, when I was wild with love and torn almost in two, scattered like leaves this night of whistling wind and rain. It is my heart that's late. It is my song that's flown. Outdoors all afternoon under a gunmetal sky, staking my garden down, I kneeled to the crickets trilling underfoot as if about to burst from their crusty shells, and like a child again, marveled to hear so clear and brave a music pour from such a small machine. What makes the engine go? Desire, desire, desire. The longing for the dance stirs in the buried life. One season only, and it's done. So let the battered old willow thrash against the window panes and the house timbers creak. Darling, do you remember the man you married? Touch me, remind me who I am. So vulnerable he is in this poem, so at the mercy of time, so at the mercy of time. Kunitz has been the recipient of many awards and honors, including the Pulitzer Prize. President Clinton awarded him the National Medal of Arts at a White House ceremony. In an interview before his death at 101, he said that he had become reconciled with death and gave little thought to his legacy. Immortality, he said, it's not anything to lose sleep over. His longevity, I'm active, I garden, and I write, and I drink martinis. In the concluding stanza of The Longboat, he wrote a definitive statement. Peace, peace, to be rocked by the infinite, as if it didn't matter which way was home, as if he didn't know he loved the earth so much he wanted to stay forever. This is Joanne Salisbury Troxell from the Poet's Corner. Smell the roses. Sip the wine of life, and read a poem. Thanks for listening. Bye now.